This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favourite season. The kids are out of school, adventure's the focus, but for others, such as me, juggling it can be tough. It can lead to overwhelm and counting down the minutes and days till those kids are back at school and the cooler weather arrives. Others may be worrying they're wasting their days of sunshine. Now, I'm not one of those people. For me, hot weather and me do not mix. Now, personally, I have a therapist myself, so I can speak openly and honestly about how sometimes those seemingly irrelevant conversations with my therapist can go on to better my life. Because therapy can help you understand your own needs better. It can make you feel more confident, set boundaries, create a version of summer that actually feels good for you, whatever summer looks like for you. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform. It's served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. How would you explain if someone you loved began changing in ways no doctor could explain? What would you do if it appeared a neighbor's hatred seemed to follow your family into the night? How would you react if a sound outside your home only ever woke one person at a time? And how would you protect your family if you believed something unseen had been sent against them? As always on The Dark Paranormal, we cannot guarantee you answers to those questions. In fact, we want you, the listener, to make up your own mind as you listen to Episode 8 of season 24 of The Dark Paranormal. Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal. Hello everyone, and welcome back to episode 8 of season 24 of The Dark Paranormal. Now, unbelievably, although I did get my wires crossed over the last week believing this was episode 9, bad Kev, slap on the wrist, this is episode 8, which means next week will be our penultimate episode of the season already. And as I explained to our Patreons, for me, this has flown like light speed. Perhaps it's down to some of the changes we've implemented and then removed, because yes, you will have noticed the original theme music is back. But that means we counter it with some different external music as we leave the show. Or maybe it's because it's the highest number of submissions we've ever received for a single season. Possibly these things could all play into it. Or maybe it's the fact I'm looking forward to season 25, being somewhat of a special season, the quarter centennial, if you will, of the show. But I think mainly it's because the interaction between myself and you guys has upped a level. And I see that only upping further as we introduce new things for season 25. Now, although all of our stories are laid out for season 25, that by no means means that we do not want to receive your experience. Because as anyone who's had this happen to them will testify, you can send your experience in today, and it may even end up this season's finale. That's an exaggeration, of course, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility. In fact, the show is so fluid that I would argue the episodes kind of choose themselves. They're almost serendipitous. There have been many an episode chosen by myself and our team due to the fact we've all been discussing a particular topic, and then an email arrives discussing that very topic. And it's almost like a wink from God to say, you're meant to do this episode this week. You could argue that the biggest factor in what story is played is serendipity, and I'm most certainly a believer in everything happening for the right reasons. But if you wish to submit your experience, and please do, because as I explained recently, I believe what we're doing here is something much more important than I believed we were doing. What we're doing is cataloguing the dark experiences with the paranormal of this era. But you will find the link to submit your experience in the show notes of this episode, along with details about our Patreon tiers and the free week trial you can gain. But more on that at the end of the episode. Now, today's episode isn't serendipitous. It was always planned to be the third from last episode of the season for a particular reason. We had this nailed in from day one, and the reason for that being is that this particular experience you're about to hear is the very first listener experience sent through to Anna at Oscuridad Paranormal, the Dark Paranormal's Spanish language sister. Now, this is the first time, on the Dark Paranormal at least, I've only skim-read this experience, the reason being I too want to enjoy reading this out and finding things as they happen with you guys. Because this is an experience from a different culture, and I'm intrigued to see how a submission from a Mexican listener to Anna's show, sent to her in Spanish, intended for a Spanish-speaking audience, differs in any way to what just English speakers would submit to the show. And so, although many parts of this experience will be also new to me, and I sadly can't do what I'm about to ask you to do, please lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we listen to Mother, What Possessed You? My name is Ricardo. I'm from the state of Mexico, and I need to tell my story. There are different theories about what happened, but the truth is, we still don't know. But what is for sure is something took my mother. This is a painful story, both for me and my whole family. I have changed names and places to protect the people still there. For me, this is therapy, a way to try to understand, or maybe to ask for help in making sense of what happened. Because even now, I find myself still asking, especially on the dark nights, when something pulls me awake in the small hours, and I lay there in silence, not quite sure what woke me up, and not quite sure I want to know. I'm 40 years of age now, but this all began when I was a teenager. We lived in a small town surrounded by forests, mountains, and enormous rocky cliffs. Quiet, the kind of place where everyone knows everyone by name and by face. My father worked long, irregular hours at a hotel, and therefore he was rarely home. My mother stayed home to raise four boys, all of us restless, all of us a handful. The youngest was unplanned, a surprise neither of my parents had expected. And when this all began, he was still very small, although he remembers it all clearly and still with fear. The house itself had a small concrete front yard, three rooms, ceramic floors, a rustic style typical of the region. Out back was a yard for washing and drying clothes. Across the dirt road ran a shallow canal of clean water, one where we used to cool off in the summer heat. The neighbours were mostly warm and friendly, except for the couple directly behind us. They shared a courtyard wall with our family. They kept themselves to themselves, never greeted anyone, and when they spoke at all, it was mainly to ask for something at the shop. The rest of the time, if they spoke, they spoke in their own dialect, closed off, private. And we had nothing against them, at first. They kept farmyard animals, roosters at dawn, hens throughout the day. But we got so used to it, we stopped hearing it entirely. That's until one morning. when something sounded different, lower, wrong. My father put a ladder against the back wall to take a look. Great, they had a cow now. The cow would bring flies and clouds of them into our home and the homes all around us. And people around us would quietly begin to complain. But everything came to a head one Sunday morning when my mother told my father she'd been hearing and feeling something slam against the back wall for days. We'd all felt it. I'd felt it. The house shaking with each impact. My father looked over the wall again and found that the neighbour had built a small roof anchored directly to our wall and had tied the cow beneath it. The banging was the cow kicking the brickwork. Well, my father went directly to the neighbour, but he was told, with a sneer, that the neighbour didn't care and that my father could do whatever he liked. So, my father did. He reported a sanitary violation, cattle in a residential area, an unauthorised structure against our wall, and what was clearly animal cruelty. And so, the cow was seized. The neighbour was fined. The same neighbour never forgave us for it. If he hadn't greeted us before, well, now that non-greet became a glare. He would shout things at us in his dialect in the street, the dialect none of us understood. But his wife was even worse with my mother. Whenever they would cross paths, she would mutter something under her breath in her dialect and spit at the ground. Then, one morning, my mother came home from the shop with red eyes and shaking hands. The neighbour had grabbed her by her arms, shaken her, shoved her, and knocked her shopping into the dirt. My brothers and I could fight amongst ourselves, cause trouble, act up. But when it came to our mother, we were one unit. And that day, the rage we felt towards that man for daring to touch her bound us together like nothing ever had previously. I'm not proud of what we did next. There was a time in my life when I was volatile, and I lost control easily. But everything went red. And I'd done some things I genuinely regret. I've changed, but it did happen. I can't undo it. We waited for the neighbour to drive past on his way home, and my youngest brother stood at the front of the house and drew him out. Insults, provocations, something thrown at his truck. The man indeed stopped, got out, moved towards my brother. He never saw my elder brother and me step out from either side. We left him on the ground, bleeding, barely conscious. I believe, right now, it was that night. More than the cow, more than the fine, that brought everything down on us. It all started a few weeks later. Every night, one of us would be woken around 3 a.m. No alarm, no reason. We were just suddenly awake, conscious. The way you are when you realize you've woken up because you're thirsty. And it was in that stillness, that absolute stillness, we would hear her. A woman screaming outside the house, close. Sometimes it would sound as if she was across the canal. Sometimes directly beneath the window of the front room. Close enough that you expected to see breath fogging on the glass. That sound was real, and that sound was loud. Although as definitely loud and definitely real as it was, it only ever reached one person. That one person who happened to be awake. No matter how long this screaming would go on, everyone else in that house would sleep undisturbed. In the morning, whoever had heard it would mention it at breakfast, and the others would just nod slowly, because we'd all been through it. You'd wake, you'd hear it for a few minutes, this raw, desolate sound, not quite grief, not quite terror, something between the two. And then sleep would drag you back under, like someone had pulled a switch. Even though you were trembling, even though part of you was desperate to move, to call out, to do anything. I want to describe what it was actually like, because I don't think I've ever done it justice when I've told this story out loud. My older brother, Matteo, was the first of us to talk really about it in detail. He said the first time it happened, he lay completely still, convinced that if he moved, whatever was outside would know he was awake. The screaming had a quality he couldn't quite explain. It didn't echo the way sound normally would in an open street. It seemed to stop at the walls, as if the scream, albeit from outside, was only ever meant for the room he was in. He said what terrified him the most wasn't necessarily the scream itself, but the silence between each scream. Because within that silence, he was convinced something was listening back. My other brother, the one just below me, said his experience was different. He told me the screaming never sounded like distress, or not only distress. He said it sounded, at times, like a call, like someone looking for an answer. He never told us this when we were children. He told me years later as an adult, when we were talking about it properly for the first time, that is. He said he hadn't wanted to say it as a boy because he was afraid that if he described it like that, like a call, one of us may have been stupid enough to answer it. I still think about that a lot. Personally, my own nights with it were bad in a different way. You see, I'm the analytical one. Always have been. I kept trying to rationalize it as I lay there. A person in distress outside. Some animal trapped. An auditory hallucination brought on by being half asleep. But each time I almost convinced myself, it would change. It would shift in pitch. It would move without footsteps from one side of the house to the other. There were no footsteps, ever. Whatever was out there didn't walk. Money goals are things we all have. My personal one is to make sure that I'm mortgage-free by age 50. How am I getting towards that goal? I'm 46, and in 4 years, do I think I'm going to get there? Well, I'm unfoundedly optimistic. But here's the most interesting thing. We only like to talk about money when we've made it, when that goal is achieved. Now, you've probably got our well-being app. Well, Acorns is a financial wellness app that wants to show a little love to everyone who's on their way to a goal. Some people shy away from the word investing because it seems like it's a word for people who know about finance, etc. Believe me, that's not a prerequisite. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. Acorns is easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your money, even if you've just got spare change. Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. Plus, the app has the Acorns Potential screen, which shows you the power of compounding and how your money could grow over time. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Believe me, I've never seen something like the Acorns Potential screen showing the power of compounding. And even that word, compounding, we all believe that belongs to the ones who work in Wall Street. It doesn't. It's yours as much as theirs. So sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a £5 bonus investment.
Join the over 14 million all-time customers who already have saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/dark paranormal or download the Acorns app to get started.
Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/dark paranormal.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
So summer has well and truly arrived, at least here in the UK. We're in the midst of a heat wave. I don't like the heat for one simple reason. I cannot dress for the heat. I don't wear shorts. I always wear jeans, or usually. However, since my last advert for Quince, where I mentioned that my friend in America has been sending me things from Quince that I order through them, and I found the quality to be outstanding, I decided to take another look back at Quince to see what they had on offer. And let me just say, my summer wardrobe is looking altogether different this year. Like I say, I don't do shorts, so Quince's European linen pants were perfect. They arrived the other day, and we're in the midst of a heatwave, as I mentioned, and they are perfect. Given I'm a summer jeans wearer, these have never made my legs feel more cool in any summer on record. Not just that, but because Quince focus on quality essentials that feel and look amazing, they are well-made basics, but without that luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They also work ethically with ethical factories and cut out middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. It's genuinely the kind of brand you end up recommending to everyone for everything. Well, most people will. I'll talk about my linen pants because I can wear them at a barbecue in the afternoon, going straight through to evening drinks. Quince's linen pants have changed the way I'm going to dress this summer. So elevate your wardrobe this summer. Go to quince.com/darkparanormal for free shopping on your order and get 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/darkparanormal for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/darkparanormal.
The worst was the front room. The older ones took turns sleeping there for a night of peace, away from the noise and the closeness of sharing with brothers. What had started as a small privilege became something we genuinely dreaded. You see, in the front room, you were separated from the rest of the family by the full length of the dark garret. No direct route back to the others. If she came for you there, you were laying alone in the dark with the window right there. And whatever it was that was outside, it was close enough that on some nights I was convinced I could hear something beneath the screaming. A kind of low, steady breath. Patient. As if whatever it was, had all the time it needed. My youngest brother, of course, had his turn in that room too. On those nights, he didn't lie still and wait for it to end. He screamed back. Not at it, just in pure, unadulterated terror. We'd find him in the morning, pale and rigid, eyes already open when we came in, as though he hadn't dared close them after the scream came. He told me once, much, much later, that on the worst night he saw, or thought he saw, a shadow move slowly outside the curtain. Not cast by a light, not moving how a person would, just a presence, moving across the window from one edge to the other. unhurried, and then nothing. He was only 9 years old. This went on for months, all of us gradually hollowing out from a broken sleep and the specific dread of not knowing whose turn it would be. We stopped discussing it after a while. There was nothing more to say, nothing more useful to say, when it finally stopped, and we all began to breathe again. We truly shouldn't have, because whatever had been circling the outside of that house found a way in. One evening, my mother went into her bedroom after dinner and was stopped in her tracks by a smell. Something rotten, like meat left out too long in the heat. She checked under the bed, through her wardrobe, along the soles of every shoe. She checked every corner. Nothing. Giving up, she went to sleep with it, and she woke the next morning to find the smell completely gone. And that whole day was clean and normal. And that night, it came back. She called my brothers and me to check, and we all smelled it immediately. All of us, no hesitation. I promise you, this was like an animal had been dead in that room for maybe a week. Not just unpleasant, the kind of smell that sits at the back of your throat and doesn't leave. Heavy, thick, something you could taste as much as you could smell. My father spent the following day tearing that house apart. He checked the drains, the wiring, the cavity in the ceiling, every corner of the room. There was nothing there. And it was always exactly the same. Every night at 10 o'clock, this hideous smell would arrive. Every morning at 6, it would be gone. Not fade, gone immediately. Even in the hottest part of the day, when anything rotting should have been at its most unbearable, the room was perfectly clean and odourless. This gut-wrenching smell only seemed to exist in the dark, and only in my mother's bedroom. Only on that clock, with a precision that felt, even to my teenage brain, deeply unnatural. A machine couldn't have been more consistent. My mother stopped sleeping in her bedroom. She moved herself to the sofa. We offered her our beds, all of us at different times, and she refused every time. She didn't want to take our rest from us. That was her. Even as things got worse, always thinking about everyone else first. But then came the bruising. My mother's skin had always marked easily. But she began waking with bruises she had absolutely no memory of earning, in places that made no physical sense. On her neck, her chest, behind her ears, even the back of her neck. All of them were the same. Oval, large, deep red fading to purple. It was as if something with a wide, open mouth had pressed against her skin and drawn it in. Genuinely, looking back, I think what scared me more was not necessarily the bruises themselves. It was the fact they weren't random. They were consistent. Always the same shape, always the same locations. As though whatever was leaving those marks knew exactly where it wanted to feed. My father, God bless him, looked for, or should I say, wished for, a rational explanation. So he took her to every doctor, every specialist he could reach. But the answer never changed. It was down to her diabetes. She had been diagnosed years before, but she'd always been meticulous. No sugar, no bread, No fizzy drinks, nor pasta, nor rice. She monitored herself carefully, in ways that put the rest of us to shame. One doctor practically accused her of lying, telling her bluntly that if she didn't take care of herself, she would develop gangrene and lose a limb. Now, my mother would stand up for herself if she knew she was in the right in a very strong way. And given how meticulous she was with checking on her diabetes, we expected her to full-on have an argument with this doctor. But my mother said nothing. She just looked at him with an expression I still carry with me. Not hurt, not angry, not accused. Exhausted. The exhaustion of someone who knows the truth and understands that no one in this room is going to believe it if she spoke it. We all travelled back from that particular visit, once again in total silence, and once again with nothing. The smell continued, the marks continued, and my mother began to disappear. She stopped cooking, she stopped leaving the armchair that had quietly become her permanent bed. Her skin turned grey and paper thin. Any knock would leave a bruise that would take weeks to fade. Any accidental cut would refuse to close. From a strong, independent woman, capable, sometimes fiercely capable, the kind of mother who would hold everything together through sheer force of will, she became something of a very old person. Hollowed out at 45 years old. When I looked at her in those last months, I kept searching for her behind her own eyes. Sometimes I thought I found something, but mostly I didn't. One day, she lay down in the armchair and she didn't wake up. My oldest brother found her. That night, the four of us went into her bedroom, looking through her things, smelling her clothes, to lie in her bed the way you do when you're trying to hold on to someone who's already gone. It was past 11 o'clock. The room was completely clean. No trace of that smell, not even the shadow of it. We all looked at each other, but no one spoke. After she died, it never came back. Not once, on any night, in any season. My two younger brothers still live in that house. The youngest paid the highest price of all, higher than even my mother in some ways, because he is still paying it. He isn't well. He hasn't been since she died. He says she visits him. She comes to him at night, sits on the edge of his bed and talks to him. She tells him which plants to pick from the backyard, which ones to boil into teas, that he then drinks alone in the kitchen at hours when the rest of the world is sleeping. And we found him there in the dark, crouched over things growing along the back wall. That same wall the cow used to kick, picking leaves in the early hours without a light. We've had to have him admitted to care more than once. Each time he comes back quieter than before. Both I and my older brother look over him as best we can, and we visit when we're able. We don't sleep there if we have a choice. But when I do stay over, I lie awake in the dark and I listen. What for exactly, I'm unsure. The garage is still there, back in silence at the end of the yard. The front room is still there. The back wall is still there. The couple behind us are gone. They were never seen again after my mother died. No word, no warning, they were simply gone. As if they had finished what they came to do. Now, I am a complete skeptic by nature. I'm an engineer. I need science, evidence, things that can be measured, tested, and repeated. But the four people I've told this story to in full have all said the same thing, each independently, without hesitation. That thing is that my mother was cursed, that the woman next door sent something into that house, something patient, something that knew how to wait, something that knew how to get in eventually, something that would study, something that once in would feed on her slowly, taking a little more each night until there was nothing left to take. I don't know. I genuinely still don't know. And if I'm honest, if I'm totally honest, I don't know if I want to know. But something was unmistakably in that house. Something that ran on a clock only it could read. Something that left the marks in the shape of a mouth, and that stopped completely, permanently, the night my mother died. Make of that what you will, Ricardo. Well, Ricardo, thank you so much for being the first submitter to Oscuridad Paranormal, and thank you to Anna for sending the transcribed file over. Now, we've spoke on this show many a time about the power of belief, and I am a big believer in the power of both magic and curses, but not in the way you may think, not in the Disneyfied way, as in Alakazam, something appears. I believe when you do, for example, a magic spell for a certain outcome, especially if you're part or the recipient of that outcome, the person casting the spell, that is, it works. And you may be thinking, no, it doesn't. I've tried 3 actual spells, and when I say try, I mean have went along with everything that's said in these spells. Now, I've tried 3, all 3 have worked. Now, don't get me wrong, they weren't wishes or spells for fame, fortune, and money. They were very specific. However, my belief is just that, belief. I believe the rituals you are taken through via a spell tell your subconscious to act differently in order to attain said outcome. Now, because we don't have an actual scientific terminology for that, or indeed anything provable, for me, personally, the word magic fits perfectly. We don't know how it works, we know it does, but I genuinely believe it's down to the changes in the individual as opposed to anything otherworldly. There's a slight difference when it comes to curses, unless, as in Ricardo's case, the individual believes they are cursed. And I am pretty sure the mother in this experience fully believed she was being cursed when A, the female that lived behind them would mumble and spit, and then B, when the male of the relationship grabbed her by the arms, throwing her shopping into the dirt, and shook her. Anyone would feel like that was some sort of uttered curse placed on them. And then if you live your life being cursed, you're going to do things which will lead to that curse fulfilling itself. But I am not ruling out otherworldly behaviours having an influence, i.e. the mother's curse is nothing to do with a scream heard by her children. And the one that really got me was the bruises. And it was more the description of the bruises. Because if anyone's been fortunate enough to see a film named The Rite with Anthony Hopkins, it's a film based on the Vatican's chief exorcist, or former chief exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth. But there is a specific scene that was taken direct from his notes, where a young woman says to a priest, Anthony Hopkins, that her daughter is possessed, or she believes she's possessed. Anthony Hopkins asks why, and the mother of this daughter says the daughter has been dreaming about a black horse who is biting her and she can't seem to wake up from these dreams. Anthony Hopkins turns up and is very, very skeptical. Although at one point, he asks the young girl to raise the back of her t-shirt and is confronted with the bruises consistent with the upper and lower set of a horse's mouth taking a bite out of this young girl's back. Now, I use the term validity quite a lot, as in something I think I've heard within a tale or experience, which for me adds validity. And this is a very third-hand, round-the-houses way of validity in my eyes. Because the fact that Ricardo describes these bite marks as being consistent in shape, in placement, and the fact that in the film The Right, albeit semi-fictionalized, in order to add another character and make an actual film, the section featuring the bites from a horse are from Gabriel Amorth's own exorcism notes, and they seem to tie in strangely well with the description from Ricardo. Now, it should go without saying, on behalf of our listeners and myself, Ricardo, absolute condolences for losing your mother at such an early age. I know what that's like. It's a strange feeling to outlive your mother, as I have. And I've only just turned 47. And though I will never say to anyone with grief, I know what you're going through, because it's such an individual process, I do have a slight inkling. And believe me, Ricardo, as you well know, you're in your 40s yourself now. You don't ever get through grief. You learn to walk with it as you age. And it evolves with you. The grief that you walk with many decades later will turn into something which is a happy thing to be walking with, as bizarre as that sounds. Something I'm sure you're experiencing yourself as I speak. Now, back to your tale. The one thing that still concerns me quite deeply with this is your youngest brother. Because you say yourself he's still paying the price. My only reticence in terms of your mother's spirit coming back and telling him how to boil certain teas, etc., would be, who says it's your mother's spirit? He seems to be disturbed by this, as in waking up first thing in the morning to go out and pick leaves before the sun rises. Now, I may be completely wrong here, but I would guess that if a loving parent came back to visit their children, they wouldn't say, "Don't sleep. Why don't you go out into the back garden and start picking leaves?" Now, how you would find out exactly what this spirit is that's visiting your younger brother, I do not know. What I do know is I would try and find out as soon as you possibly can. But Ricardo, thank you so much for this experience and for being the first submitter to our sister program, Oscuridad Paranormal. Now, at the start of the episode, I did say I'd return to what you can gain by becoming one of our wonderful Patreon members. Well, firstly, as I've said before, if I didn't host this program, I would become a member of this Patreon. And I'm being genuine when I say that. I've scoured the internet since the internet came out for a forum of like-minded, nice, welcoming people, be they skeptic or believer, in the topic I love so much. And I would have never expected that place to have existed in something I created to add additional content. But believe me, it does. Joining this Patreon adds you to that select group of like-minded individuals. At our lowest tier, you lose the adverts from the shows. From our second tier, you get early access and ad-free episodes. And from our third tier, you get both of those and also an hour's worth of extra programming each and every week of the year, even on the downtime between seasons. And of course, one is coming up. The first show is Dark Bites, one you're fully aware of, where we read the shorter experiences that didn't quite make it lengthwise for a minisode, or was somewhere in between a minisode and a main episode. Secondly, we have After Dark, where I literally sit in front of a camera, unedited for 30 to 40 minutes, and we disseminate the previous week's experiences. Now, if that hour extra a week wasn't enough by itself, along with the early releases and ad-free episodes, you also gain access on that tier to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, which stands at over 200 hours of Patreon-only, never-heard-before experiences. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, especially as we approach that break, simply head to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal or click the link in the show notes. And once more in the show notes is the link to submit your experience. Or you can go direct to thedarkparanormal.com and click the Submit My Experience button. But until next time for our penultimate episode, remember, whenever you're discussing the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time for our penultimate episode of season 24, right here on The Dark Paranormal.